ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th Canto, Chapter 13, The Behavior of a Perfect Person, Text 24. Trishnaya Bhavavahinya Yogyai Kamar Apuryaya Karmani Karyamanoham Nana Yonashu Yojita Trishnaya Bhava Vahinya Yogyai Kamaya Apuryaya Dharmani Karyamanoham Nana Yonashu Yojita Trishnaya Bhava Vahinya Yogyai Kamaya Apuryaya Karmani Karyamanoham Nana Yonashu Yojita Trishnaya, because of material desires. Bhavavahinya, under the sway of the material laws of nature. Yogyai, as it is befitting. Kamai, by material desires. Apuryaya, without end, one after another. Karmani, activities. Karyamana, constantly being compelled to perform. Aham, I. Nana Yonishu, in various forms of life. Yojita, engaged in the struggle for existence. Translation. Because of insatiable material desires, I was being carried away by the waves of material nature's laws, and thus I was engaging in different activities, struggling for existence in various forms of life. Purport. As long as a living entity wants to fulfill various types of material desires, he must continually change from one body to another. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that as a small piece of grass falls in a river and is tossed about with different types of wooden tree branches, the living entity floats in the ocean of material existence and is dashed and tossed amidst material conditions. This is called the struggle for existence. One kind of fruitive activity causes a living being to take one form of body, and because of actions performed in that body, another body is created. One must therefore stop these material activities, and the chance to do so is given in the human form of life. Specifically, our energy to act should be engaged in the service of the Lord, for then materialistic activities will automatically stop. One must fulfill one's desires by surrendering unto the Supreme Lord, for He knows how to fulfill them. Even though one may have material desires, one should therefore engage in the devotional service of the Lord. That will purify one's struggle for existence. Akama sava kamo va moksha kama udhara di tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. A person who has broader intelligence, whether he be full of all material desire, without any material desire, or desiring liberation, must by all means worship the Supreme Whole, the personality of Godhead. It's Bhagavatam, 2nd Canto, Chapter 3, Text 10. Anya bilashita shunyam jnana karma janavritam. Anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhaktir uttama. One should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably and without desire for material profit or gain through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. That is called pure devotional service. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Om Gyana Timinandasya Gyananjana Shalakya Shrakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namah. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhupada Shri Advaita Gadadhara Sivasadi Gola Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Now, the Python Man is speaking in answer to Prahlad Maharaj's questions. The questions were quite appropriate. And the answers will be appropriate. Therefore, anyone who hears these questions and answers will benefit immensely. It is very rare in this world that you find proper questions and proper answers. Generally, people don't know how to ask a proper question about their situation. And, of course, even if they did, it's very rare to find proper answers. But we can't simply blame the dearth or the scarcity of proper answers for our problems. People today don't know how to ask the right questions. They don't have the tools by which they can analyze their life. Their heads are completely spinning with thoughts about everything except what is important, what they really should be doing. Therefore, they're easily cheated. If you don't know how to ask a proper question, then how are you going to get the proper answer? Prahlad Maharaj's questions were very appropriate. You're obviously a saintly person. I see that you're just laying here, doing nothing. You're not endeavoring your economic development or maintenance. Yet you're so fat. How can this be? Don't mind me asking. Don't consider me impudent, please. And how did the Python Man react? Oh, your words are a shower of nectar. I know that Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who's Bhagavan, full of all opulences, he's predominant within the core of your heart because you're a pure devotee. Narayan in your heart, or anyone's heart who is submissive, he drives away all the darkness of ignorance as the sun drives away the darkness of the universe. He says, Prahlad Maharaj, you know everything, yet you have asked these questions, which I will try to answer according to what I've learned from authorities. We spoke about this yesterday. Iti shushuma dhiranam yenast vichachakshade, the Upanishad says. This is the explanation according to Shastra, what the great authorities have said. And here, the Python Man says, Yata Shrutam, as I have heard from authorities, not as I have invented, as I have made up. We've been speaking about how the great mistake today is that persons think they can understand ethics, morality, religion, spirituality. Through their own imperfect senses, they will devise the standard. Try to look into your hearts and see how deep this contamination goes. We will make our religious standards ourselves. We will make our own standards for what is spiritual, what is right, what is good. And of course, it will vary from person to person because we're all individuals. This is what's going on today. No one dares to think that indeed there is a universal system a universal standard. Because as soon as you accept that there's a universal standard or system, you've got to ask the next question. Where does that universal system come from? Who is responsible for a universal system of dharma that covers everyone in all circumstances? That would be your next question. Systems are personal. You don't know any system that hasn't been created by a person. Of course, this is logic. It is not the proof. If I say, you've never seen any system that's not created by a person, that's logic. It's based on your experience, using your present experience to infer something beyond your experience. But it's not the proof. The proof is the Shastra. The proof is the Vedic text that there is a Supreme Person who has originated all systems. That's the proof. But just to help people understand the proof, we use logic as far as it goes. Have you ever seen a system not designed by a person? But that's not the proof. So please don't misunderstand these things. Now, obviously the Python Man was not ready to indulge in idle chatter and conversation with anyone. But he's going to reply to Prahlad Maharaj because he sees Prahlad Maharaj as worthy. As Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport that we heard yesterday, a saintly person is not eager to speak to anyone and everyone. Therefore, he's known as grave and silent. Generally, common persons... What is a common person? The ordinary person who's caught up in the struggle for existence. Struggle for existence means trying to satisfy your mind and senses. Such a person doesn't need instruction. They don't want to hear it. So therefore, a saintly person will not address such persons. Yet, then again, out of great kindness, a saintly person will speak to ordinary persons. Because we're following Lord Chaitanya, we're following in the footsteps of this great kindness to speak to ordinary persons, to speak to persons deeply entangled in karmic activity. We speak to them about the Supreme Absolute Truth. That is Lord Chaitanya's special mercy. Prahlad Maharaj is who he is, an extraordinary devotee. Therefore, the Python Man is going to answer his questions. But he's letting you know the qualifications for his answers. In other words, he's saying, I'm not just going to engage in idle talk answering your questions. Yata Shrutam, I'm going to answer according to authority. Everything in genuine spiritual life is like that. There's a precedent. There are standards. Not that, oh, each of us experiences the divine in our own way. You know what that always ends up as. Ordinary sense gratification. You can't break out of that loop while speaking about experiencing the divine in your own way. You just end up eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Now let's look at the Python Man's first answer. He's explaining what's going on in material existence. Trishnaya bhavavahinya yogyai kamaya apuryaya. Because of insatiable material desires, I was being carried away by the waves of material nature's laws. And thus I was engaging in different activities, struggling for existence in various forms of life. It's a very concise and graphic autobiographical statement. In order to speak like that, you have to have knowledge. This is not an ordinary autobiographical statement. It's one based on a person who has insight. What happened to me? What did it to me? What did I do to myself? I did myself in through insatiable material desires. Therefore, I was carried away by material nature's laws. That's the response to material desires. Thus, I was engaging in different activities, struggling for existence in various forms of life. We should see ourselves in that way. Insatiable material desires. Now, you may think, maybe there's some material desires that can be satisfied. That is the illusion. Material desires are always insatiable. That means they can never be satisfied by definition. That is the constitutional position of material desires. Just like we want to know our constitutional position as eternal servants of the Supreme Lord. Similarly, the constitutional position of material desires is never satisfied. There is simply the illusion that these desires will be satisfied. That's all. And unless you can pierce through this veil and see the reality, you'll always be bewildered. You'll always be fooled. What is the contamination today? Oh, I feel a desire. How nice. Because I feel a desire, I should act on it and obtain satisfaction. That's actually real spirituality. When you feel a desire, your own individual desire for something, and you act on it, yes, you're experiencing the divine in your own way. It never dawns on such bewildered creatures that material desires are impossible to satisfy. What's the proof? Look at people's faces. They're all totally absorbed in sex life. Why aren't they ecstatic? You ever ask yourself that? Why do they look so miserable? They're totally drowning in lust. So why aren't they blissful? Yet, Maya knocks on your door. Why are you trying to control your senses? Solve your aching heart by indulging in sense gratification. You can look around and see no one is satisfied in this way. But it is the nature of the illusion to beckon you to do something that will not satisfy you. Come, come, come. This will be nice. This will be good. This will be interesting. This will be absorbing. Your body will experience interesting sensations, and your emotions will be drenched. Come, come. This knowledge of the Bhagavatam is so important to help you see clearly what's going on. Otherwise, you'll believe it. You'll believe the promissory materialism. That's what Maya does, promises you. This will do it for you. This will fulfill you. This will fill the gap in your life, the hole in your heart. And then once that gap is filled, you'll be okay. You won't be like the materialists who just go on and on with these desires. No. You just indulge a bit and then you'll be satisfied. Leave it at that. Impossible. Therefore, the Paita man is saying, Trishnaya bhavavahinya, because of insatiable material desires. Insatiable material desires, that's not a special category of material desires. It's like, well, there's some that are insatiable and there are others that are satiable. There's some that can't be satisfied. That's true, but there's some that can be satisfied. No, none of them can be satisfied. When you understand that, then you can see how you're being ripped off by material nature. How you're being cheated. That's why it's called Maya. You're being cheated. And while you're being cheated, you think you're so competent and expert. An essential ingredient of material existence is this ability of the conditioned soul to march forward with false pride to the slaughter. Can you imagine having a proud march towards the slaughterhouse for you? Marching proudly, declaring your expertise, your competence, your individual spirituality, as you march up the ramp to the slaughterhouse. That is the process of material nature. Very deadly. It's cheating because you're promised satisfaction. You're promised peace, contentment, all through material desires, which can never be satisfied. These things you have to think about. You have to reflect upon. When you feel material desires, analyze the situation. Okay, I'm feeling this. Now, if I act on it, what will be the result? There'll be this, there'll be that, and that, and that. And then what? How will I feel afterwards? I don't know. I feel very burned out and very bored and... Nah, this doesn't look good. When you start to analyze the propositions of Maya through the eyes of the Shastra, then you can defend yourself. Otherwise, you have very little defense. The ways of Maya are too strong. You can defend yourself through Krishna's instruction, through the instructions of the great devotees in Bhagavatam. You can actually arm yourself. So when material desires strike you, you can look them in the eye. Say, oh, it's not the way it appears. You can think about the effect on your consciousness, how your consciousness will become dry and brittle, how you'll feel so toasted, how your face will look like all those miserable people you see on walking around the streets who are totally drowning in material desires, drowning in lust, drowning in sex activity. But look at their faces. Why aren't they happy? You have to think like that. And why is Maya pushing you to do these things when you can look in people's faces who are doing this all the time and they're so miserable? Therefore, the intelligent person just says, enough of this. This is crazy. I'm turning my back on all this. But you can't turn your back unless you are engaged in Krishna's service. That is your protection. Otherwise, daivyesha gunamai mamamaya jraya. The material energy is too powerful. You can't just turn your back on it. You have to engage in Krishna's service. By engaging in Krishna's service fully, automatically you've turned your back on Maya. Therefore, we always want to see how devotees are engaged in the service of the Lord. That is their only protection. So please understand, material desires cannot be satisfied by definition. That is the constitutional position of material desires. How curious do you have to be before you realize that? It's like when you're a young teenager, particularly in New Zealand. You've got to experience your body, your senses. You've got to get out with the other teenagers and cavort and... Why? Because you've got that body. The body's full of desires. It seems just natural to feed those desires. But no one is satisfied, and they can't understand why. To try to add some nectar to the situation, what do? You add intoxication. Yes, that'll supply the missing dimensions. Intoxication. It'll make the sense gratification special. So then you just go year after year, drowning in intoxication and illicit sex. And by the time you're 21 or 22, you're completely crazy. There's the process. And then if you're fortunate, you come to Krishna consciousness. And, you know, we spend a lot of time trying to, you know, make you sane. while getting you to chant Hare Krishna. This is the process of material existence as lived today. So you can save yourself so much trouble by scientifically, analytically understanding that material desires can't be satisfied. This is a revolutionary thought. And try to perceive the contamination from the current folk philosophy that it's good to have a desire. It's your desire. You have your own desires. And when you act to fulfill them, then that's genuine spirituality. When you understand that material desires can't be fulfilled, then you'll see the cheating done by material nature. Now, think of being carried away by the waves of material nature's laws. Like you go to the beach with a strong surf. When I was in South Africa, in Durban, we went to the beach and the surf was very strong. And the lifeguards were always trying to keep people within, you know, the markers. Because the surf was strong, they didn't want people straying, so they'd be too far away for the lifeguards to save. And the surf just carries you away. Once you get into the water, you have to be pushed around like that. Similarly, once you drop into material nature, then you have to be swept this way and that way. That's just the way it is. Why are you always looking at your own abilities, your own qualities, in terms of your material self? And you don't understand the ocean that's just, its current is dragging you here and there. Where are the New Agers who understand that? They just think they're in a neutral atmosphere, which provides a nice learning experience. No, you're in a fierce surf with all sorts of rips, undercurls, undercurrents, everything is going on. You're being knocked here and there, thrown to the bottom sometimes, and then you say, oh, but it's all just a learning experience. Now, it's true that material nature is meant for you to learn, but you learn by hearing from Krishna. What does the Lord say in Bhagavad Gita? Prakritim purusham chaiva vijanari ubhavapi. You should know, Lord Sri Krishna says, that both material nature and the living entities, both Prakriti and Purusha, are beginningless. Both are energies of the Supreme Lord. The material energy and the living entities existed before the material creation. Before the creation, both the material energy and the living entities are within the body of Mahavishnu. And then, at the time of creation, they're released. And the material cosmos is formed by this combination of matter and spirit. You don't belong in material nature. But because of this susceptibility to being attracted by material nature, you undergo so much suffering in a place you don't belong. It's always nice to feel some discomfort, some displacement, feelings of displacement in this world. That is correct. As soon as you start to feel like, oh yeah, I feel at home here in the cosmos. Yeah. And when you feel like that, you should know you're caught very securely on the lap of Maya. You should always feel a little bit out of place here. You should always sometimes ask yourself, what am I doing here? Why did I come here? What do I expect from this place? You see, people lack the ability to analyze their environment. They're talking about ecology. They're talking about belonging to the universe, feeling at one with the cosmos. But no one understands what is the nature of their environment. It's a deadly place. You shouldn't be here. The Purusha, the living entity, shouldn't be in the Prakriti. You shouldn't be in the material atmosphere. But because you've jumped in, which is your fault, you're swept away by the ways of material nature. And you cause your own happiness and distress by your identifying some waves as good, some waves as bad. What else does Lord Sri Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Karyam karana kartate hetu prakriti uchate purusha sukhadukanam. Material nature is the source of all the causes and effects you see in this world. But purusha sukhadukanam, the living entity, is the cause of the happiness and distress. In other words, material nature awards you a machine, a body, with senses based on your activities in your past life. And you take that machine with its senses and you get yourself in further trouble and you cause and you label some experiences happiness and some experiences distress. It's like a car company. You buy a car. So you get that car and then you implicate yourself. According to your buying capacity, you get a car. And you drive around that car and you have all sorts of experiences, which are your fault. You can't blame the car company. You wanted a car. You got the kind of car that you could afford. And you drive around and cause your own happiness and distress. Similarly, material nature provides you with the vehicle according to your qualification. But you are to the blame for your own happiness and distress based on what you do with that vehicle. You jumped in to the car. You jumped into the ocean of material existence. It's like if you've ever driven a car in big traffic. Let's say 1 minute you're driving on a nice solitary road. Like yesterday when we were on our way to Otaki. We were doing okay, and then we hit this place where there was construction, roadworks, and we had to slow down. We were immersed in bumper-to-bumper traffic for about 10 minutes. So that's like material existence. You're driving along, and you've got to accept whatever comes your way. What's the reason? The reason is guna sangha. Association with the modes of material nature. That is explained by Krishna in the next verse in Bhagavad Gita. Purusha Prakriti Stohi. The Purusha, the living entity, is situated in the Prakriti, situated in material nature. Shouldn't be that way. It's artificial. It's a dreamlike condition. But there you are. Purusha Prakriti Stohi. Bhunkte prakritija. Karnam gunasangasya sarasad yoni janmasya. You associate with material nature, and therefore you have so-called good and bad experiences. All because of gunasanga, association with the modes of material nature. You all know what it's like to associate with others. Have you ever thought that you're associating with material nature? Do you ever think like that? You know what it's like to be with other people, family, friends, partners. What about being with material nature? What are the reactions to being with material nature? Karyam gunasangasya sadasad yoni janusu. You pick out the waves of material nature. This is a good wave. This is a bad wave. And you waste your whole life in that way. Just like, you know, the example we give about surfers. They could be a cold winter day, but they're so attached to their surfing. They hang out offshore waiting for the perfect wave for a half hour, hour, you know, wearing their wetsuits. And then, oh, here comes the perfect wave. Then you've got to claim it. That's mine! You have to ward off all the other surfers. Anyone here was a surfer? Yes. So, oh, you also? So did you claim the waves? Have you claimed the waves? Yeah. When that perfect wave comes, you've got to claim it. Mine! I've been waiting for this one. You others wait your turn. Mine! What do you say? How do you?
It's just the right sim that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. So, similarly, you spend your whole life claiming, this is a good wave, this is a bad wave. What are you doing out there in the ocean, freezing? And artificially discriminating, this is a good wave, this is a bad wave. And when the so-called good wave comes, you get a ride for maybe 30 seconds before you're discharged upon the shore. And, oh, ecstasy. Oh, it's feeling so nice. Wow, 30 seconds of just oneness with nature. 30 seconds of just thrill. Sometimes you see these pictures of surfers with the wave curling on top of them, making like a tunnel, and they're just zipping through, right? It looks so glorious. How many seconds does it last? And then, you're thrown on the shore, but you think that's so much fun. You go back out again, wait for another good wave. Mine! Here's a good one. This way you pass your whole life. So, people live like that. And they're not simply waiting around like surfers. They're working hard to be in position for that perfect wave. We're going to have money. We're going to have a nice house. We're going to have nice cars, nice friends, nice partners. So when that wave comes, we're going to ride it. We'll have nice intoxication. All to ride that good wave. And we want to minimize the bad waves. Sadasad yoni janmasur. So this is your life. Calling out, this is a good wave, this is a bad wave. But what are you doing in the ocean of material existence? Why struggle in this way with different bodies? Now, we see in this purport that Srila Prabhupada explains that one must fulfill one's desires by surrendering unto the Supreme Lord, for He knows how to fulfill them. In other words, we're not so expert in desiring. This requires humility to understand. We're really not so expert about desires. We're just tiny. We're conscious entities, that's so. We have the desiring capacity, but we're not so expert at it, separate from Krishna. Krishna is the expert at desires. He's qualified with Swaraja Lakshmi. He has the ability to satisfy his unlimited desires. He's got unlimited, immeasurable ability to satisfy unlimited, immeasurable desires. That is God, Kaviraj Goswami and Chaitanya Charitamrita says. Because Krishna has the unlimited ability to satisfy all his desires, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, what is your ability to satisfy your desires? How have you done? Be honest. How have you done? You've all done the vices of Kali Yuga, almost all of you. You've done the vices of Kali Yuga. What else is there to do in Kali Yuga other than these vices? You've all done it. So, what was the result of your desiring? Look at the faces of the people as they walk on the street. What's the result of their desiring? Obviously, they're not very expert, but it takes great humility to understand that. Although I have the desiring capacity, I'm not very expert at knowing how to desire. But as soon as you realize your connection to Krishna, then the whole art and mystery of how to desire becomes known. Because Krishna is impeccable about desire. He's flawless in his desiring capacity. Therefore, if you take your desires and put them into devotional service, you'll see that Krishna knows how to fulfill your desires. Even if you have material desires, that's all right. Engage in the devotional service of the Lord and you'll become purified. Your struggle for existence will be purified. So much of devotional service depends on your trust and constant realization that Krishna knows best how to fulfill my desires. It's a very subtle peace formula. Because normally a conditioned soul thinks, these are my desires, I know best how to fulfill my desires. This kind of mentality makes you really mean and nasty. My desires, and I know how to fulfill them. No one can tell me how to fulfill my desires. Of course, people don't always reveal that surly mentality, that fierce mentality, but that mentality is actually the basis of material existence. It may be packaged in a very nice way. Let's resonate with one another. Let's tune into the spirituality that is you and me and everyone. All that is just camouflage for, I've got my desires and I know how to satisfy them. And how are you going to cooperate with this? That's what's going on. That's the bottom line. But as soon as there's some humility, I have desires, but maybe I don't know what's good for me. Maybe I don't know how to desire without getting myself into trouble. When you start having that kind of humility, then you can hear from Krishna, who is the expert in desires. That's why Krishna's unlimitedly attractive. He's unlimitedly expert in desire. We can't believe it, though. When you're an impersonalist, Mayavadi, all desire leads to ruination. This Krishna has desires, therefore he's an ordinary person. Because we all know, desires cause problems. No, Krishna has not the slightest problem with his unlimited desires. And he can teach you that art. You cannot become God, but you can become as expert as God in how to desire. That is what Bhakti Yoga teaches. You cannot become God, but you can become qualitatively equal to God in terms of how to desire. Perfectly. So much of Bhakti Yoga depends on our accepting. Krishna knows how to fulfill my desires. Then you become peaceful. Yes, I have desires. But Krishna knows how to handle them. But as long as you think, I've got to fend for myself. I've got desires. I've got to get out there and crank. I've got to get into it. I've got to, stir things up. Struggle, achieve, acquire. I've got desires. The longer you think like that, the more you perpetuate your material existence in different bodies, as the Python Man is saying here. Thus I was engaging in different activities, struggling for existence in various forms of life. In other words, this struggle isn't just for this life. It goes on in different bodies, different planets, different species. All unnecessary. That you should tell yourself. This is all unnecessary. But it takes some humility to say that. All this struggle is unnecessary. Now, within your heart, there is the super soul. The super soul is constantly trying to get you to listen. Krishna is not lazy in your heart. He's not inactive. He's always trying to get you to turn toward him. We should never think that once we understand the Lord is in our heart, accompanying us, that he's not doing anything. He's always speaking, trying to get you to turn, but we don't listen because of our strong material desires. What's the nature of the Lord in the heart? Upajastha numanta cha bharta bhokta maheshra. Within your heart is the Lord as the witness and the observer. He's the maintainer. He's the transcendental enjoyer. He's the Supreme Lord within your heart. Krishna is speaking to you from without, as the Shastra, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. He's speaking to you from within your heart. So much help you have. He sends his representative, the spiritual master. So much help you have. But because of these lusts, these insatiable material desires, we get carried away. Therefore, we've got to stop material activities. Bhakti yoga means to train you to think of Krishna's pleasure. And in the process of doing that, it does away with your fear that if I focus simply on Krishna's pleasure, what will happen to me? What about me? When you say, what about me? You mean, what about my desires? As if you're so great and handling your desires and desiring the right thing. But that fear is there. If I just focus on Krishna's pleasure, what about my desires? Who's going to deal with that? Who's going to deal with my desires? So much about bhakti yoga means understanding that Krishna knows how to handle your desires. He knows how to best fulfill your desires. Accepting that, you'll become peaceful. Okay, let me just think about Krishna's pleasure. My desires will be handled by Krishna. Then you're peaceful. Otherwise not. So let us think about the ocean of material existence. Let us not just blindly walk through this environment, through this world, without understanding what's going on. Try to see the waves of material nature. Try to see how people are labeling one wave happiness, another wave distress, claiming the waves for themselves. Did you do that, Nicola? Did you claim waves? There's not that many surfers where you were. At the famous surfing places where there's lots of surfers on a, you know, especially on a weekend, you've got to claim the wave. You claim the wave, it's mine. You get a quick ride, and then the wave throws you onto the shore. Oh, what fun! Let me go out and do it again. In this way, riding the waves of material nature, people pass their whole life. And the desires are never fulfilled. Impossible. So please remember at least this one point. Material desires are insatiable. What to do about them? In the first verse, in the first chapter of the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, it is stated, Nivritta Tarsar Upagiyamana Bhavoshadach Chocha Manobilama. Glorification of Lord Krishna will extinguish the material desires. Glorification of Lord Krishna is the correct medicine, Bhava Oshada, the correct medicine for stopping the disease of Bhava, repeated birth and death. We've explained this before. Birth and death is a disease. So much effort's made to research cancer, get the solution for so many diseases. Who's working on solving the disease of material existence, which is you have to take birth, get old, diseased, and die? These are four symptoms of the main disease, which is I've contacted material nature. I'm associating with material nature. So who is researching how to become free from that disease of material existence? Please meditate on how material existence is a diseased condition. It means you've been infected. The symptom of that infection is you think you can satisfy your desires. Now, if you, through hearing about Krishna, if by hearing about Krishna attentively, or if you hear about Krishna attentively, then you cure that disease. Hearing about Krishna is the proper medicine for stopping that disease. Not only is it the proper medicine, but it's such a tasty medicine. Usually medicine doesn't taste so good. But hearing and chanting about Krishna is the sweetest medicine. It's sweet in of itself, and then it also happens to stop the cycle of repeated birth and death. So what more could you want? So the Bhagavatam says, Kauchama Sloka Gunanivada, who in their right mind would not take this medicine of glorifying Krishna? Uttama Sloka, the Lord who is praised with choice verses. There are persons, though, who won't take this medicine. Pashugna, butchers. They're butchering their own life and they're butchering other creatures. Those kind of persons cannot take shelter of the cure for material existence. They're determined to butcher themselves, to commit suicide. No, I've got my desires, my desire program. Yes, I've got things to do. I'm going to be fulfilled. I'm going to be creative. I'm going to relate. I'm going to resonate. Generate individualistic spirituality. That means pashugna, butcher. You can just see the butcher's knife. You're just chopping your life. Such persons can't take the sweet medicine of hearing about Krishna. And then, of course, those who are actually engaged in the process of animal slaughter, their hearts become so hard, so devoid of compassion. Everyone else can easily take to this medicine, this sweet medicine. Puman virajeta vina pashugna. Only the slaughter of the self and the slaughter of other creatures would refuse to take this remedy for material existence, which is hearing about Krishna. By hearing about Krishna, you become nivritta trishna. You become purified of the fever of material existence. All right, any questions? Yes? You're sacrificing the results of your activities for Krishna. Gradually, under direction, you'll understand that I'm not attached to the results. And then why should I be attached to the activities I do to get those results? Whatever Krishna wants. You start to trust Krishna. You give Krishna a little bit, and hey, that wasn't so bad. You give Krishna a little bit more, hey, that was pretty good. And then gradually you begin to think, I should not only give Krishna the results, but I should also give Krishna the entire process of offering. Okay, Krishna, how do you want it done? How many of you would like a relationship as the ultimate with someone who said, look, don't worry about how I do it or what I do. Just take the money when I give it to you. Anyone ever had that kind of relationship? Don't question what I do. Or I'll decide what I do. But, you know, you can have the results. You can have the fruits. In the traditional household, in the old days, the men would have that macho attitude. Don't question what I do, where I've been, who I'm hanging out with. You know, I bring my paycheck home every week, so leave it at that. Shut up. It's like that in the good old days. The family breadwinner, the man. Reminds me of an old blues song some years ago. I'm paying the cost to be the boss. Woman, don't try to tell me how to live. You must be crazy and sick out of your mind. I'm paying the cost to be the boss. No, you know, people want the loving experience of being concerned about everything that the partner does, you know. They want to feel for everything that the person does in the relationship. They want to know about it all. They want to have a say in it. So, in dealing with Krishna, it's nice that you sacrifice the results for Krishna, but it's even better when you're not even attached to how you achieve the results. You leave everything up to Krishna. Krishna, whatever you want and however you want it. That's much better love. And sometimes those who are performing karma yoga, they can get proud, just like the old-fashioned husband. I gave you my paycheck, what more do you want? They think that entitles them to, you know, be the controller. Paying the cost to be the boss. Krishna, I've given you so much, therefore I have a right to control. Therefore I have a right to lord it over. I'm paying the cost to be the boss through devotional service. What? I gave Krishna so much, what more does he want? I donated so much money. I did something with my great artistic expertise. It's enough. Paying the cost to be the boss in devotional service. Obviously, it's not the sweetest attitude. The sweetest attitude comes from full surrender. Krishna, whatever you want, however you want it. That is Vrindavan. Everything is done simply for Krishna's pleasure. From beginning to end, from activity to result, all for Krishna's pleasure. Everything is under the jurisdiction of Krishna's pleasure. Not just the results, but also the activities. If you all here simply think, how can Krishna be pleased? Then you'll have the spiritual world here. If everyone is simply thinking, how can we act for Krishna's pleasure? You'll have the spiritual world here, without a doubt. So think about that, paying the cost to be the boss. That's the old-fashioned home. Anything else? Yes?
You've got the attitude Krishna, whatever you want, and kind of want it. Vedas vision and
isn't that a vision? Krishna, whatever you want, however you want it?
But it seems to be like, seems reactionary rather than practical.
Why?
Because you have to wait for instruction.
No, that's bad. To wait for instruction before you do anything. God forbid.
But in those circumstances, it might not be.
You have that desire in your heart. Krishna's in your heart. You have that sincere desire in your heart. Krishna, what's best for you? And how can it happen in the best way for you? You have that desire in your consciousness. Krishna in your heart knows. But if that mentality is foremost in your heart will become purified. That mentality will burn away all the pollution. Krishna, whatever is best for you, however you want it, when you want it, how you want it. That's the Vrindavan attitude. As opposed to the paying the cost to be the boss attitude. I've done so much service around here, I got a right to throw my weight around. Sometimes you'll see devotees like that. You know. Where were you 20 years ago when I donated such and such Lakshmi? Therefore, I have a right to say what's going on here. That's the paying the cost to be the boss attitude. The Vrindavan attitude is everything for Krishna's pleasure from beginning to end. But we're afraid, maybe. What about me? What will happen to me? What about my individuality? My creativity? Oh no! As if Krishna doesn't know how to handle us. Once again, there's the pride. I know what I'm doing with myself. They're my desires. I'm the expert in my own desires. Even though birth after birth we proved ourselves to be failures, still we cling to this belief. I know me and my desires. I've got to look out for my own desires. And bhakti yoga means let Krishna worry about your desires. Gradually you'll become so absorbed in just being attracted to Krishna. What about Krishna's form, his qualities, his activities? How can I give more pleasure to Krishna? So we don't want our consciousness full of our own plans and ambitions. Ultimately, we want our consciousness to be full simply of Krishna's beauty. That is real love. Anything else? Kadira? To see yourself as a servant, you have to engage in devotional service. To engage in devotional service steadily, you have to be willing to accept Krishna's program instead of imposing your own program. you want to spend your whole life in male-female negotiation, it's quite boring, isn't it? Quite boring and time-consuming. Year after year, trying to balance and negotiate and arbitrate. To some extent, that has to be there in any relationship. But if it becomes the center of your life, there's no taste to it. But if Krishna's service is the center of your life, then you can transcend all these male-female bickerings and negotiations. Live for Krishna's pleasure, live for devotional service. What happens when you start just thinking of your own program, your own desires? You get angry, right? Why aren't my desires being fulfilled? Who's worrying about my program? I've given for so much time, so many years. Now what about me? And you get angry. Why isn't anyone worrying about my desires? What about me? What's wrong with this world? This world is not giving me what I want. So then what's the solution? You take it out on your husband. And you, of all persons, you have not fulfilled me. The guy's joking. God, what do you want out of my life, you know? Reminds me of another old blues song. The guy's singing the blues, how blue can you get? I brought you a $20 dinner. You said, thanks for the snack. I bought you a brand new penthouse. You said it was just a shack. I brought you a brand new Ford. You said, I want a Cadillac. I gave you 7 children, and now you want to give them back? I've been downhearted ever since the day we met. Our love is nothing but the blues. Baby, how blue can you get? So this is what happens when we're frustrated with our program to lord it over material nature. We have to take it out on someone, right? And the perfect person to take it out on is your spouse, your husband, or your wife. That's what they're there for. From the material point of view, that's what they're there for. They're there either for sense enjoyment or anger. You get out of that trap by focusing on devotional service. Otherwise, this cycle just goes on and on. Bhoga tyaga, enjoyment renunciation. Enjoyment renunciation. Desire anger, desire anger.
Also being on the street, meeting and cultivating people that they're really into. I was with a guy yesterday who was into paganism, and he was confirming what he was saying, that they believe that, you know, we can be happy here and nature's a wonderful thing. And also he was talking about how these meetings are going on and are saying that this one druid from England was saying that you know, all the gods are dying and we now's a good time because now we can take those positions. Absolutely incredible. I just couldn't believe what he was saying. And he's a nice gentleman, but I was on the street again another day, and a band were playing here, and I met a couple of musicians, and they were basically saying, "Yes, we're God." The question is that do we, when they're very much absorbed in these philosophies, it's a very sensitive operation to try to. Because they're very, very sensitive also. You can't sort of just go in and try to gradually. Well, my question is, can you give advice sometimes to preach to such people when they're very absorbed in these?
As soon as someone says they are God, or all the gods are dying and now it's our time to take their place, you have every right to, explain the facts of life to them.
It was just that one gentleman was coming here, and it was very difficult to know when to. Is there an opportunity there just to try to put something that may bring down into what he's saying?
Yeah, you have to be expert doctor to deliver the medicine. Still, if someone says, "I am God, we all are God," then you have to plant your feet and explain to them some basic facts of reality. Don't let them get away with that. We can tolerate so many things, but we can't tolerate that.
It's quite a shock from the bleach in London. It's very common here to meet people like that. It's very different to the bleach in London. It's very common. What you're talking about is New Age.
It's the folk philosophy that's everywhere. New Age is comparatively, it's dying in New Zealand in terms of the formal identification. It was 10 years ago, it was really raging. But the basic tenets are there as the folk philosophy everywhere. Because here there's not such an intense struggle for existence as in London, so everyone's got time to speculate. In London, you don't have time for anything. Just work like a dog, enjoy like a dog, that's it. But in New Zealand, as you say, it's like a small English coastal town. So everyone's got time to, the gods are all dying, and now it's time for us to take their place.
had meetings out in this, bought a farm and bought plant trees and things.
They've got the time for that.
Yeah.
They're misusing their good karma. You would think that with this valuable time they have as compared to other countries, they could use it for properly developing in Krishna consciousness, but they're squandering their situation. Anything else? Yes?
It was like in the class, questioned by your wife, and we used to ask this question. And I was thinking the question to ask you about personal culture and Krishna consciousness. And then when I start chanting, I begin to see their minds and have like find an entity. And sometimes you've seen people stop chanting because of that.
I've explained many times. If you're very dirty and you get into the shower and you see the dirt start to splash all around, you don't step out of the shower because you're afraid. You just continue to remain in the shower and become clean. It's like when you put clothes in a washing machine. You have a washing machine here? What's in the center of the washing machine? Agitator panels. And by their very name, they're meant to agitate. They're meant to, shake the clothes within the water so the dirt comes out of the clothes. So no one gets upset that washing machines have agitator panels. They want the washing machines to have those things in the center because they want the dirt shaken out of the clothes. So So the first thing that the chanting of Hare Krishna does is shakes the dirt out. It shakes the dirt out. That means it's working. So you have to explain to them, this means the process is working. Now just continue on. It's just a blow to their ego because they thought, I was a nice person. I thought I was very peaceful and not like the other people. And then they start chanting. They see all this horrible stuff. They go, oh, it's not me.
It is you.
And they blame the chanting. This chanting is just taking me to a place I don't want to go to. It's not me. This chanting is not me. Let me become a pagan and something. Be happy in nature. So you explain it like that. All right? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Is that Swamiji?